This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, bringing you a story today from one of my favorite places to visit, a city that really knows how to honor its veterans, Albuquerque, New Mexico, where Hometown Heroes airs every Sunday morning at 8 on the Rock of Talk, KIVA. 93-year-old Adelano David lives there in Albuquerque. We've heard this Filipino veteran of World War II describe his escape from the death march, his work in a spy ring led by High Pockets, who, if you've studied your history of the Pacific War, you might know High Pockets as an American woman named Claire Phillips. We've heard several situations where Mr. David's life was spared, and when we left off, his head was literally on the chopping block, a Japanese soldier drawing his sword, and our friend Al convinced he was about to die.
And then the officer came with his sword. He said, "Quah!" It's something that he exclaimed. And then they started laughing. It was a big joke. I was so mad, but I could only cry. I could only cry, and everybody was laughing. They had a good laugh at my expense. And my deaf mute brother tried to attack them, but he was held back. When they found out that he was deaf mute, they ignored him. I think that was the scariest time of my life.
Well, I think everyone listening is saying the same thing. They tie your hands behind the back, walk you to a stump, stick your head on it, and draw a sword. So obviously they're going to cut off your head. That's what you're thinking. You said you prayed. What do you pray in a moment like that?
I just prayed Our Father, and that's it. I kept saying Our Father. Because they held me in suspense for a bit. Anyway, when it was over, I was shaken up, and I was sweating. And I could not, because I was driving the van, I couldn't drive anymore. They just put me in the back and lay down.
When the Americans returned and were able to recapture all that land and claim the Philippines, what did that mean to you, to your family, to the other Filipinos that you knew? How big a deal was that?
Apparently it's quite a big deal, because we were all skinny from lack of food. And we were in the boondocks, and there was no food but chickens and vegetables. And when I was in the boondocks, suddenly I was paddling a canoe to bring some tomatoes and some spinach, lettuce to my family, and some chicken and eggs. A piper cub came roaring over the treetops and dropping leaflets. And the leaflet said, "I have returned." I didn't waste any time. I took my supplies to my family, got them fed, explained that I had to leave. I don't know when I'll be back. So I was excited. I paddled my canoe through the Pampanga River and got to Palit in Manalin, where I docked my canoe. And I passed. It was in the backyard of a fabulous mansion. It was empty because it was wartime. As soon as I got on the road was dirty and musty and dusty, and everything was covered with brown dust. And then this tank came up. After several troop carriers and tanks came by, I finally flagged one tank, and he got me in. This name is Sergeant James Bell. He was the first guy who was killed in Korea, in top of his tank, writing to his wife. Anyway, he took me in. And he got me to Camp Olivas, where MacArthur was, February 5. So I gave them my dog tag and my record, and they started the 201 file. And right away, I wanted to join the attack on University of Santo Tomas to liberate the 2,500 prisoners. I was refused for some reason or other, because I was skinny and skin and bones. But anyway, Sergeant Bell, we became friends, took me to his tank. We got into his tank, and he showed the movie of them and they had invaded the Philippines, and they showed Japanese from hideouts, caves, coming out burning in flame from the flamethrowers. And my feeling was, I was not animosity, I just felt, I said, humans being burned alive. I was shaken. And I told my friend, "No more. I don't want to see anymore because he wanted to show me all his exploit from Leyte, island to island, to Luzon, and he showed me nothing but burning soldiers, flamethrowers. So anyway, we became friends. As a matter of fact, I still have his pictures.
Have you ever considered how different things would be in your homeland if the Allies had not found victory over the Japanese?
We did. We considered we were getting settled to the point that the U.S. had abandoned us, and that although we were facing years and years of Japanese occupation, we were getting adjusted to it, excepting for the atrocities, because their singular ordinary form of punishment is to slap you in the face. To them, that was nothing, because they lived with it. And then to the extreme cases where whole villages were massacred. In one town, this was when they learned that the Americans were coming, they lured the whole village into the church, promising them rice and food. And when they locked the church, they set it on fire. And when the door broke down from the fire, the villagers came out and they were shot by machine gun fire. So there were at least about 200. An eyewitness saw that, but he was not in the church.
I can't imagine what that's like to watch that happen. Is that anger or rage or just heartbreak?
At that point where we were already used to hunger and starvation and getting used to deprivation, when we used to be a prosperous nation, we got adjusted. This was rage. Rage against the Japanese.
When that eventual victory was reached, when you heard that the Japanese had surrendered, what did that mean to you after everything you'd been through?
By this time, I was assigned to Philippine Army or USAFI headquarters. I was screening insurance forms for GIs in Philippines, and I was also part of the group that was screening guerrillas. To find out if they are bona fide guerrillas or just fake guerrillas, which were many. Yeah, they were guerrillas only for one day. I happened to publish a mimeograph newsletter for the headquarters called Camp Murphy Newsletter. I scooped several American editors for Stars and Stripes because I was the first one to mention the surrender. I had interviewed and taken notes from these populace who were just shooting guns into the air and just getting drunk with happiness the PJ Day. I found out later that two of those editors was coup on this newsletter was one of the became the editor of Los Angeles Times, and the other one was Chicago Times. And that was my role after the surrender. I began to just lead the life of a enlisted man in the headquarters, doing what I could.
That wasn't the end of your journalistic days, though. How was it that you ended up working with Edward R. Murrow?
When I first arrived in the States, I couldn't find a job, but because I enrolled in Columbia U for film production, TV and film production, they made me an intern. What I was to do was write his news copy from the teletype machine in 25 words or less. So I did that.
What was he like to work with?
He was a nice person, but he was outspoken. And when I shared this bathroom, it was carpeted with cigarette butts. He was a strange chain smoker whenever you saw him. And then I finally gave up sharing his bathroom. I had to go to the common bathroom across the hall. But he was a very nice person. But the only problem is when you are an anchor, you usually have your group. Once you are fired or quit, everybody is fired or quit. And he made the mistake of going against William Paley. The first thing you notice when you're at CBS, your secretary is gone. The next day, your telephone is gone. The next day, the desk is gone. It's by the elevator. That he had no human resources, no program like that. It was just be good or out you go.
When you think back about what you did and what you went through during World War II, what are the things that you're most proud of and most thankful for?
I'm proud of having fought the Japanese with the Americans, because we were under the rule of the Spaniards' cruel sovereignty for 300 years and 200 years with America. So we were Americans at heart. In fact, if you went all the way to the boondocks, you could go away with English. They spoke English. But I'm proud of the idea that I fought for the U.S., I fought for the Philippines. And my sense of adventure gave me enough pride to write about the heroes, which I am concluding now.
Who are the heroes in your eyes?
My hero is the one who substituted for me on my scouting expedition and died for my assignment, because I would have died there. And my heroes also is General Wainwright and General King, because without General King, we would have died on the front just from starvation. Or because we were too weak to fight, they would have killed us because they didn't take prisoners. So I'm proud of the fact that I'm an American. I became a citizen in 1973, my wife and I.
You mentioned that you had tried to find that family, De La Cruz, that you talked about that had harbored you and saved your life. I wonder, too, about those men who pushed you into the ditch, into the bushes. Did they survive the march? Did you ever find out?
No, because on the march, 12,000 Filipinos died in 35 miles, and 6,000 Americans died in 35 miles, and then another 1,000 every day at the camp. So they were probably one of those, because they were also starving and thirsty. I've never heard of them.
Do you ever ask yourself, why? Why me? Why did all these things happen at the right time so I could survive? And if so, what's your answer?
Somebody up there likes me. St. Peter is not ready for me yet. Yeah, and I've had the close escapes even in civilian life. I'm still here.
You're still here, still going strong. And one of the things you've done in more recent years is you designed a memorial to those who suffered and died on the Bataan Death March. Tell me about that memorial, what inspired it, and how people can see it.
Well, I remember a Filipino wife extending a ladle of water to two soldiers, one American, one Filipino, and that stuck in my mind. So one day I was already in Orlando. I was publishing my own magazine in Orlando. Somebody came one day knocking at my door, and he said, "Are you Telano David?" "Yes," I said. "We have learned that you know how to draw and how to paint. That's one of my paintings there." I said, "Yeah. Well, we would like you to draw a concept of a memorial, and I want you to draw what you remember." So I drew a Filipino woman giving aid to two guys. Then they made a sculpture out of it, and they made a bronze life-size statue and put it in the front of Lake Kissimmee in Kissimmee, Florida, which is about 3 or 4 miles south of Disney World. And at the inauguration, I was the guest speaker for having designed that thing. And I had a Filipino general and an American general as guest speakers. I probably made a very good speech, because the generals, the two of them, has asked me for a copy so that they could use it in their own gatherings. So I was kind of complimented on that. And then they told me that my drawings will be in a time capsule to be opened in 100 years beneath the statue. Wow. It's now a tourist thing. It's life-size, facing the lake.
I know you can't recite the whole speech from memory, but if they complimented you on the speech and said it was so great, I'm sure people at home are saying, well, what did he say? Do you remember what the crux of your presentation was and what it was you were trying to express?
Well, the thing that made women cry in the audience was when I said, "This memorial is to honor your brothers and sisters, uncles and sons, and they are still with you, sitting beside you, celebrating this occasion."
I'm sure you brought tears to a few other people's eyes today with some of the stories you told. I just want to say thank you for serving our country, for serving your original country, the Philippines, for fighting for freedom and for being able to share that legacy with us. Is there anything else that you think we should know?
I am so happy that there's now a move to recognize all the veterans living or dead here in Albuquerque or California or Texas. And I just learned that there's a move which is gathering strength about the recognition of Filipinos who were not recognized properly. In fact, they were denied benefits at one time. I feel that at last we are given the recognition we deserve.
Well, I think everybody who has listened for the last hour will agree it is most certainly deserved. If you'd like to see photos of Mr. David and of that beautiful memorial he inspired in Florida, go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and keep an eye out for his upcoming book. I'll let you know when it hits the shelves. We're out of time on this edition of Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.